Nineveh.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
And there's only one thing that I'm afraid of, and that's the people in elected office taking away my rights. I'm not afraid of the crook that's going to come to my door, because if my dogs don't get him, I will. And it's my job to defend myself. It's not your job to protect me. It's not your job to defend me. It's your job to protect the Constitution and protect my rights to defend myself.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism, one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on here on Agenda 21 Radio. It's a very, very fast-moving news day, as usual. And it's still just early, right? It's coming up to, it's after 11 o'clock East Coast time and 8 o'clock Pacific time, and the day is just starting on the Pacific coast, but it's already rocking and rolling over there on the East Coast. And with us right now to help us through our levels of understanding about what's really truly going on is Scott Adams of the Scott Adams Show. And Scott, this has been quite a news day already, and of course the weeks, I think it's just kind of warming up for the president right now, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's just going to be a complete meltdown for the Democrats going forward, you know, especially when you start to hear about these committees revving up to, you know, Ron Johnson's getting into the thick of it. Lindsey Graham is finally maybe going to do something. You got to always knock on wood with Lindsey Graham. And then you have the new intel, the Burr's replacement. That is a welcome sight right there. Richard Burr was – he's basically the guy that called Don Jr. in for 18 hours of committee hearings or whatever.
Yeah, he was playing for the other team.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely, he was.
Not awful. And he was working hand in glove with Mark Warner, spinning a lie about Russian collusion that we know really didn't exist. And the Russian hacking certainly was not provable because of the chain of custody violations that CrowdStrike was guilty of. And the Sean Henry testimony, the CEO of CrowdStrike, who said there is no consensus as to whether there was a real hack achieved by Russia or not. Mm-hmm. So how in the world then do you get to indict the Russian officials the way Mueller did? So Mueller's going to be looked at. You're going to look at all these other things with Lindsey Graham. He's going to call Yates and Susan Rice and Comey and Brennan all in to talk to them. It turns out that there's a big disparity between Susan Rice and Sally Yates and their sworn testimony.
Shocking. Shocking.
Be shocking. For,
I'm shocked. I'm yeah. shocked there would be a disparity there.
Yeah.
You mean someone might be lying?
Because she could be disbarred.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, which I think is hysterical, is I called it the smoking 50 caliber machine gun email that Susan Rice sent to herself after Donald Trump was president. What's up with that?
The January 20th email?
Yeah. I mean, that's called the smoking 50 caliber machine gun. It's not the smoking gun. It's 50 cal. I mean, my God.
The first thing to do is give Obama plausible deniability there. And, and what she said was that she was in the meeting. Yates said under oath, I'm talking about the Forward On meeting.
Right.
They were all in the meeting. Clapper, Brennan, you know, and Yates and Susan Rice and a bunch of National Security Council people like Eric Ciaramella and his lover, Sean Misko, who works for Adam Schiff. A lot of people like that were in the meeting. They were part of the transition to Trump. And what happened was Obama asked everybody to leave, but Yates and Comey. And like I say, one of the things you have to remember is Sessions, his confirmation was delayed. Why? Because the two people in that meeting, Comey and Yates, were in charge of American investigations. The acting attorney general at the time, at that moment, was Sally Yates. Loretta Lynch was there, but I mean, Sally Yates would have been the acting going into the new administration. So while they were trying to confirm Sessions, so you recall how slow they were to confirm Sessions. The reason why is those Democratic senators were in on this. They were trying to delay to give Sally Yates and James Comey, who work hand in glove together, another bite at the apple, more time to get after Flynn and overthrow the Trump presidency. And what happened was I think Trump understood early on, something was up. He got tipped off, you know, by Admiral Rogers about the wiretapping, and he understood some things that we don't even probably know he understood at the time. But I don't think it's a coincidence that he issues the travel ban that causes Sally Yates to be fired on January 30th, just 10 days after inauguration. That's odd to me that that interaction would have happened. So it tells me that maybe the travel ban was somehow connected with this coup d'etat that was going on against Flynn and the presidency.
Like someone was going to go someplace.
Expand on that. I want to hear what you have to say.
Just
about
like maybe they were going to go travel to the Ukraine to button up some details. Because we know that, I'm just throwing this out here. We know that from our investigation into the California Military Reserve, there's a lot of activity around that point in time. People being sent from Sacramento to the Ukraine to clean up the business of the Ukraine right after the inauguration. I'm shocked that people don't know that.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people are wondering what was the motivating factor for Flynn. I think, you know, you could talk about what Flynn knew, where the skeletons are buried, and you can talk about his knowledge of Benghazi. You could talk about the cover-up of the investigations related to the FBI and the CIA covering up for Benghazi and the email gate. Those are all true. But I also think it's just as simple as, you know, he was a very powerful chess piece that was blocking. If you've ever played chess, if you take your pawn and you take it to the other guy's end zone, you can turn that into a queen, right? You know that, right? About chess. So you got a pawn sitting there, like say it's on the edge, and you're blocking that other guy's pawn. Now that pawn can't move, right? It can't move. It can't go sideways. So you got someone blocking that pawn. Well, that was Flynn. He was the blocker. He was basically going to block the leaks and the coup from starting because He understood. He right. knew my face. He knew by name. He
Everybody. Knew all the players.
Sean Miska and Abigail Grace and Eric Ciaramella and Fiona Hill. He knew all these players. And he and KT McFarland were going to go ahead and clean this up. And that was going to then be the exact time that they were screwed. They would have not been able to have that wedge into the White House, because we remember very early on, leak after leak after leak, and every one of those leaks was subject to 10 years in prison because they were classified leaks to the press. And that was happening in collusion with Mark Zaid, the attorney for the whistleblower. That was happening with the compliance of Adam Schiff benefiting from these leaks, and he was spilling a whole bunch of things. And this investigation started before Trump was ever even sworn in. And so Trump never had one day of sunlight with respect to this. And we know that, you know, after January 30th, that was it. Daniel Jones and Mark Zaid went into action. Mark Zaid said, he was the whistleblower's attorney, said the coup has started, series of steps, lawyers will be involved, ultimately we'll have impeachment. And he did it. And there's another letter between Samantha Power and President Trump on December 24th, 2016, where he basically said, she basically alluded to a plan that would actually come to fruition in the latter part of Trump's administration, and it did.
Well, I think a couple of things here that is just the assessment, the T word has to start to pop up here.
Treason.
Is that the word? I'm sorry. I thought it meant Tom or something like that. The T word, treason, is really starting to circulate around in my head, and I'm sure in a lot of other heads out there as well, because you know they start to suss out some of this stuff, and they say, oh, they really didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't illegal. But when you start to look at the totality of the events here, it's really called treason. That's really what this whole thing is all about.
Yeah,
and
Paul,
it's treasonous behavior.
Paul, so as long as you have Russian meddling as a narrative, then you could say you've made a mistake and Trump only got caught up in the crossfire. But as I said on your show before,
right.
if you were to just completely wipe Russia off the board and say, okay, let's just for 1 second say the whole Russian thing was made up, which I think is true. So now you take that all off the board and all you have is a whiteboard, a clean slate with Comey, Brennan, Clapper, and a bunch of other deep staters that were spying on a political campaign to prevent him from winning. They were using sources paid for by the DNC and Hillary Clinton, 50% each, to pay Perkins Coie, who then used subcontractors like Fusion GPS and CrowdStrike to proliferate and do their disgusting, nasty actions. And at that point, they were then having to cover up their campaign rigging, their election fraud, and that's a penalty of big numbers and years. Then disrupt the transition team to keep them off their footing, and then ultimately try to use all of that manufactured BS, for lack of a better word, to try to impeach the president, which they were on record at the time as suggesting that was their goal all along. And we see it. And it's at the heart of the matter, the meat of that matter, is a guy named Daniel Jones. And Daniel Jones was working for Dianne Feinstein, and Dianne Feinstein, staffer for Dianne Feinstein. And so during the Kavanaugh thing, where Deborah Katz, who's now the attorney of Dr. Bright at NIH, was then the attorney of Blasey Ford, and they were going after Kavanaugh, well, Daniel Jones and Deborah Katz were working hand in glove with that situation. And there was doxing going on and a whole bunch of other shady business. But Daniel Jones also, one day after Zaid did his tweet about the coup has started, January 30th, the same day that Sally Yates got fired, the next day, Daniel Jones opened up two companies, two organizations that paid upwards of $3 million to both Christopher Steele and his Willingham company called Willingham, and Fusion GPS's shell company called Bean LLC out of Austin, Texas. And he paid $2.3 million to Bean LLC to finance and fuel Fusion GPS. Were they paying off journalists? More than likely they were, because that's another thing. Remember, Devin Nunes got access to the bank records of the Fusion GPS. And I guarantee you, those records have never been revealed, and he had access to it. He's seen them. And I would love to see the bank records associated with that. And what you're going to find is that someone like Jake Tapper was a very happy man.
Yep. And you're going to find other people, too, you know, paying off, you know, various reporters and news agencies as sort of the currency for these people. And that's why they're getting such favor. And why they're able to manipulate so the population so well. But, you know, I was making the argument in the last couple of hours about the effectiveness of what we have been doing in the alternative media to really be the disruptors and bring about the truth. Because, you know, we're growing. They're not. People are starting to listen to the truth and the fact they're digging. You know, more people are doing a lot more deep research than ever before. And, they're coming on board going, God, you guys are right. Yeah, we've been right, shockingly, for years and years and years and years. And, of course, this is putting enormous pressure on the deep state. I really believe that. It's certainly putting enormous pressure on the leaders here in California that work with the deep state. Of course, Nancy Pelosi's nephew is Gavin Newsom. A lot of people don't know that. It's all familial. Everything that San Francisco wants out of the United States, it's all being transmitted through Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff and that whole cadre of folks. It's California run. And more and more people are finding out about the influences of these folks from San Francisco. And again, Hollywood is Adam Schiff, but the whole San Francisco treat, if you will, connects to China and all the problems with China right out of Chinatown with... And again, that is Nancy Pelosi territory, and it's Dianne Feinstein territory, and it's Kamala Harris territory. Can't leave her out. And it's Gavin Newsom. It's Jerry Brown. It's all these folks are all out of that area.
It's interesting to see Donald Trump at work, President Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And what is interesting about it, because I get complaints from my listeners, and basically they say, is Trump flipping, or why is Trump so nice to Gavin Newsom, or why is Trump so nice to Phil Murphy from New Jersey, and why is Trump so nice to Andrew Cuomo from New York? They can't stand each other, right? I mean, everybody knows Phil Murphy's a nut. You know, Northam's a nut. And Andrew Cuomo with the nipple rings is weird. And Gavin Newsom and all these people. So the idea is that put yourself in this perspective. Say you're a Democrat and you got this, you know, you're just a Democrat, okay? And at some point, though, if you come out and you start whacking all these people that the Democrats like, the Democrats are not going to agree with the authoritarian rule, that's for sure, that, you know, but they still are not sure about whether they're going to like Donald Trump. So what Donald Trump is doing is he's placating. He's admitting that there's some truth to the COVID. He's known some people that have died. He's doing the best measures. Taking the hydroxychloroquine is an amazing thing that he's doing there too. That's another play to disprove the hydroxychloroquine. That's a whole different discussion right there. But what he's doing is he's trying to groom and win over with carrots, not sticks, the Democrat party that's shaken up right now about what to believe and all this new revelation that's going to come out. If he starts acting like a mean fool, mean guy toward their people, there's, you know, who they support, whether it's Joe Biden or anybody else, they're going to probably reject him and vote third party or do whatever, not show up to vote. So what he's trying to do is groom them into coming over to his side. And I think that represents at least 20%. I think that California, Nevada, New Mexico, Minnesota, New Jersey, and possibly New York. Remember, Giuliani won New York City. And what they're doing against the Jews these days in terms of shutting down yeshivas in New York City, I'm telling you, New York is potentially in play. That's a state that was won by Pataki, statewide Republican, and the city that was won by Giuliani, not all that long ago, right? I mean, and so these are potential things that are in play. And you and I both know about California being somewhat of a red state right now, yeah, in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, the new California experience has taught me over the last 3 or 4 years that California is really about 75% to 80% conservative. And we've got such a, you know, an unbridled control over California by the Democrats, all out of San Francisco and Hollywood. And again, those are the major population centers that they've been able to put, you know, strike fear into everybody and control the state capitol. And of course, the legislative process has all been corrupted. You have an 11-month legislature and, of course, the monoparty system and all that stuff, all the modification. And there's voter fraud, like you can't believe in California. That's been able to enhance their positions. But now with the discovery of the new California situation and us canvassing all 58 counties and being able to get a real clear picture of where these counties stand, you start to realize this is really predominantly a conservative state. And the vote has been totally suppressed. Opinion and thoughts have totally been suppressed in California. Our prediction, Scott, when we had the primary out here in March, we sat down, our staff sat down, and we said, okay, what's it look like for prospective congressmen coming back in? Now, keep this in mind. To show you how suppressed it has been in California, California in 2008 and 2010, had about 26 seats of the 53 seats that were Republican. If after the 2018 election, that number had been whittled down to only 7 of the 53 seats. Now we just picked up Garcia out of the 25th district, which is part of New California, by the way. It's the upper tier of Los Angeles County, which is what we call LA Rural. It's one of the counties for New California. He wins. Okay. He won not because there was the voter fraud that was happening. It was because there were some preventative measures against voter fraud that were thrown in at the last minute. Number one, they had observers at the polls. Number two, they broke out and put in two polling stations in heavily Democratic districts along with the mail-ins. Now, here's the problem. The mail-ins really did not show up like they thought they were going to show up. And the other part of that is those polling places were put up right in front of two major companies, Northrop Grumman, and I think Lockheed was the other one. So people could come over from those companies and vote. Now, which way do you think they're going to vote? They're going to vote for the jet pilot, you know, Garcia, who was with the Navy and flew F-18s, the F-18A Hornet. And so they're going to vote with him. And he also worked with aerospace, those companies as well. So that's how they won the election there for Garcia. But here's the bigger point. As we looked at the primaries and we looked at the number of voters that were coming out, we looked at the circumstances of every one of the 53 seats, we feel, and this is not really out on the limb too far, we think that there could be as many as 22 seats picked up by the Republicans in this next election cycle, as many as 22. And you add those 8 that we have currently, that comes out to 29 or 30 in that range. We say that that's the high level. Low level, 16 seats win plus 8, that'd make it 24. At any rate, there's going to be a huge shift, in my opinion, to the Republican side of the House of Representatives, all brought to you by California. And Trump takes California, by the way. Absolutely. And this is without the Republican Party in California. There is no, let the listeners know, and our listeners know this, but the, you know, nationwide, the California Republican Party is void. It's null and void. It has no impact, no influence. It doesn't like Trump. The California Republican Party are Trump haters, which is, you know, you find that pretty odd, but that's, they're as much Trump haters as the Democratic Party. Now, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in California, neither one are having, and they never had planned, forget about coronavirus, they never had planned to have a convention this year. They have $1.16 billion available to the Republicans. That's all they had to run a campaign. And that was in February. They had made that announcement. That's all that nobody's donating to the Republican Party.
Right. But Donald Trump, I think, is doing some things that are really good with that. He's promoting, he's using social media effectively. But what happened with the voter rolls and where they had to concede and remove 1.5 million people from the voter rolls, that was significant. You claim it's a higher number than that. But, you know, the main thing is when you look at the disparity between 2016's Democratic primary and 2000, 2020, you know, when Biden and everybody was running out there. It was a much different set of numbers, you know, between Biden and Bernie and Hillary and Bernie. The numbers were so much bigger in 2016 for California. I think it has something to do with them being forced to clean up their voter rolls to a certain extent. And, you know, I've never had this with California before where I thought it could potentially go in play. But Trump is such an enigma, such a different kind of character that even Democrats can say, if I support Trump, it's not really that I'm supporting, I'm becoming a Republican, because Trump is neither Republican.
Exactly.
Democrat. And so it makes it easy for them to swallow that red pill. I want to. How much time do we have? Because I have a couple.
Just keep talking. I'm not running commercials on this one, brother.
All right. So you know,
I have control.
I have Republican, you know, listeners, right? And so, conservative listeners, and they're really upset. Even Gateway Pundit was upset about, you know, basically two things: Barr and basically saying no to Obama and Biden. And also the vaccines being controlled by the military. So let's start with the vaccines being controlled by
right.
the military. A lot of people think that they're upset about this. They think, oh, they're going to be forced by the military. It's like, you know, to put this vaccine in their arm. But if you listen to Trump when he was talking to Maria Bartiromo not too long ago, he basically said he's going to start off with nursing homes and elderly. He wants to take the vaccine out of the control of Fauci's patents and out of the control of Bill Gates and his profiteering. I got on tape Bill Gates saying he makes 20% return on investment. So if he spends $10 billion, he makes $200 billion on vaccines. It's ridiculous. It's insane. No wonder they're pushing it. So they got all these shell companies lined up to where you can't miss. It's sort of like playing the craps table, and you got everything lined up in just a way that you're guaranteed to win. That's what Bill Gates has done with that business. It's a racket. So he's defunding WHO. He looks at Bill Gates as enemy number one. He definitely looks at Fauci as a criminal. I think Trump looks at all these things. And he's going to do two things to try to fight back against the early voting. And that is, he's going to try to control the pace. Because if it was up to Fauci, he would wait a year and a half. And states are saying, we're not going to be fully out until we get a vaccine. So if he can bring it into the government and control it, he might be able to get a vaccine before the election, which would then deny the right of that vote by mail.
Right.
So that would be the thing he's combating against. So he's doing two things in counter to what they're doing. They're trying to extend the stay at home, and they're going to dramatize the COVID flu season in the fall to try to make it so, yes, everybody agrees you need to vote by mail. We know that's riddled with fraud. So Trump is trying to avoid that if he can. And how he does it is he's taking the hydroxychloroquine pill. He's not going to be he's not going to get sick from it. It's going to work out great for him. And more people and more studies are going to be released. Then with the vaccine, for those states that are still in denial, he's going to control that vaccine and say it's available to anybody who wants it, but I'm not forcing you to take it. And he might be able to get that thing out before the fall, in which case it would answer both of those calls, right? And that would be his attempt to work against the deep state on that issue. So that's one. I think that it's just mainly to get it out of the hands of Bill Gates and the World Health Organization and Fauci and his patents and all the corruption that goes along with it. That's one. Now, William Barr said he doesn't think that Durham's investigation is going to implicate or cause, you know, Obama and Biden to go on a perp walk. But I think we've already seen that Obama and Biden are guilty from the January 5th meeting, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to take care of itself. But what he's doing is this. Everybody says that Barr is the president's right-hand man, the president's attorney, right? That's not the truth. Eric Holder was Obama's wingman, that's for sure. But William Barr is pretty much a stand-up straight shooter. And so far, I think he's done a great job. So when Barr says that, what he's telling the left and the mainstream media is that I am not the president's personal attorney. For those of you that are big Obama fans and Biden fans, you have nothing to worry about. Because remember, if Barr was to go after Biden and Obama, you would probably jeopardize Trump's black vote with Obama after Obama. And then what do you think the narrative would be in the mainstream media if William Barr went after Biden? Wouldn't it be election meddling, that this is a disruption of the election, take down your political adversary? That's all they would talk about. So what he's got to do is take those two distractions and I think political miscalculations off the table. And he's going to worry about the low-hanging fruit, Brennan, Clapper, Comey, Loretta Lynch, Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, Samantha Power, you know, all these people that are very much in play for the low-hanging fruit part of the corruption. And they're eventually going to turn it on Obama and Biden. But I think Trump is going to have to win the election and wait for the next term to take down Obama and Biden.
That's right. And that's, my understanding and the people I talk to, that's exactly right, is that the low-hanging fruit thing is the analogy here. They are the low-hanging fruit right now, and they are definitely going down and by their own devices, clearly. But the big fruit is going to be put off until the next after Trump gets reelected. And, I mean, it's just too much, number one. And number two, it raises way too many political questions overall. You know, you don't want to have this whole thing where you're looking for a conviction for Hillary or Obama, you know, right away in this election cycle down next after the election's over, when Bill Barr can actually, you know, turn his attention to bigger fish, so to speak, to fry. That's when they're going to fry. And it just, to me, it would be bad politics and a very bad mix to pick on poor Joe. You know, poor Joe. Now, I was making this analogy in the last hour, Scott. I want to get your thought on this. You know, when there's been four events, basically, that we've seen where they've tried to take out Trump. The first one being Russia, the second one being Stormy Daniels, then the impeachment, and now this, the COVID virus, which is designed really not to take out also Trump, but the whole United States, basically. But, you know, here you have a situation where they did it. I think what they've done is they created a crisis. They managed the crisis. The crisis failed. Then they moved on to the next crisis, not thinking that the prior crisis was going to come back to haunt them. Well, at every turn, of course, Trump has been able to resurrect that crisis and use it to his own devices, as we're seeing right now with Russia. But what happened with that crisis is you had the stumbling, bumbling, idiot behavior of Mueller when he testified. And so the thought came to me, where are we seeing this behavior again? Well, we're seeing this behavior now with Joe Biden, who is about as guilty as it comes with certain things relative to COVID virus. How did the COVID virus get to China? Could it have been by Joe Biden and his son? And that's just one little tidbit. The whole thing with Ukraine, with all the money for his son and himself and all the other things. You know, is it a cover for the scandals that are going on, that he's got this act going on, very similar to what you saw with the cover of the stumbling, bumbling, you know, Mueller when he went to testify? Are we seeing the same act again?
We are. And you know, I'm sending you a text message on your Skype. So I want you to take a look at that audio clip. That's going to be really, really a major league situation. So I just sent you a Skype chat message. But, you know, Trump said that his biggest opponent isn't Biden. And this guy could barely string his things together. But what it is the mainstream media and the lies. He's going against a complete, you know, Democrat army of bureaucrats in Washington. You know, I think one of the things that really needs to happen is we need to decentralize Washington and bring things out across the country. We don't need everything right here in one city, especially now that we have all kinds of teleconferencing. But if you see that thing that for Biden right now, this is going to be another problem for Biden. It corroborates that video that we all saw about firing the prosecutor, right?
Yep.
And said for $1 billion, and sure enough, they fired him. Well, this particular audio is of a teleconference meeting of Biden and Poroshenko and how they were promising Lushenko to be the next prosecutor to do the deed of shutting down investigations and basically firing Shokin. And so this is confirmation that what he's bragged about in January 2018 in the Council of Foreign Relations actually happened, because there's the video and audio that's associated with it. Do you see what I sent you?
No, yeah, I got it. In fact, I was going to try and get to play that in the last hour and didn't get there, but I did mention this video that's out there, and it's the dynasty-driven one, and it says, Biden, because it is in our, it says, so I want to move on as we hang up, and I'll put that in train, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Absolutely second. Anyway, this is the whole thing with Poroshenko, and I think we got the, let me get the audio going on here. And I'll start the whole thing again. So here we go. Let's see if we can get this going. Well, maybe not.
I'll put that in train, and I'll get back to you as to what I'm able to do.
Absolutely. The second thing, thank you very much indeed. This is exactly what I'm looking for. The second thing is that I want to thank you that you give me your word that immediately when we change the station and I appoint the new prosecutor general, and it would be Yuri Lutsenko, as we agreed on our previous meeting in Washington, and when it happened, we can have at least long guarantee, and thank you very much.
That was something that was done a while back. Obviously, it was sort of coming to life again now, and it's a big one. Go ahead.
He makes a reference to Donald Trump in that. And so what's interesting about that is this had to have been during the transition period. I think it was in December. Mm-hmm. And that's what's interesting about that is he had a teleconference with Poroshenko after Trump won the election and became President-elect Trump. That's the issue there. And that's going to probably play in. You know, the thing about it is, too, is that it's not just about taking Flynn out because they wanted to, you know, tap the White House, and they knew that Flynn would catch on to it quick. But they also, President Trump said that they were also wiretapping his three oldest kids, you know, mm-hmm. Ivanka, Eric, and Don Jr. So also Rand Paul says he was surveyed. Ted Cruz thinks that he was surveyed. It's kind of interesting. And it's also interesting, too, because Ted Cruz's right-hand staffer was McCord, Mary McCord, and she's implicated in this thing during this time as well. So you wonder where Ted Cruz was on all this back in the beginning. I think he's changed. I think he's come around to realizing that the true enemy is the Democrats and not Trump, just because Trump does some things differently. And I think they've kind of made their amends on everything. But you take a look at this, and I don't know how you can't say that is 18,000 times worse than whatever phone call was going on with Trump and Zelensky. But yet today, just today, Susan Rice was on the CBS Good Morning America.
Yeah.
And she said basically that Obama gave the order to Biden. So, you know, she's in the running to be a Veep, right?
Right.
And she's, you know, black woman. He says he's going to get a woman. He says he's going to get – and she's one that knows where all the bodies are buried too, right? She's in on all this corruption. She's the compulsive liar. And so she's saying that Obama directed Biden to do the Ukraine deed, right? And that was all Obama's direction. And to me – it's not necessarily throwing Obama under the bus, because they're trying to say that the whole Western world had discrepancies with Shokin, which if you listen to Giuliani, that's nowhere even nearly close to being the case. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because they're talking about this case on mainstream America for the first time in a while.
Well, you know, I'd never heard of – I mean, to think about it, that Susan Rice is on – an ABC network saying things like that. at this point in time. That is shocking. I mean, wait a minute. Are we getting into the scandal? Are we reporting the scandal? Are we trying to free up, you know, Crazy Joe? You know, make sure he's not tainted by anything. And as you said, it's not so much that they're throwing Obama under the bus as they're trying to get pull a Biden out from under the bus right now.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, so I'm going to send you this, the link to that particular story. But that's a new wrinkle, because that particular thing, I'm going to go ahead and send that to you now. But that's a really interesting wrinkle right there, because that's a new narrative that they're telling, that they're selling. Before, remember, they were denying this. And nobody's ever been under investigation. Nobody's ever held their hand up and said, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. Nobody's ever had to do that. Hunter never did that. So when they say this has all been adjudicated, investigated, it's
totally
all
wrong. Totally wrong.
Never been looked at.
Right.
There's not one indictment, not one prosecutorial under oath conversation. And I just sent you that link where it says, update, Susan Rice tells CBS Joe Biden's actions were at the direct order of Obama. It's a new narrative. And so they're going to have that to deal with. They're going to have Durham to deal with. They're going to have the Senate committees to deal with, Lindsey Graham's committee, Ron Johnson's committee, and now Marco Rubio's Intel committee.
Right. You mentioned this. He's replacing Burr. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is interesting. Little Marco. You know, Marco, let me have a drink of water as I give a national speech, Marco. He's replacing Burr. And I listened to him this morning on, I think he was on Fox. I was listening. And I was saying, God, he's grown up. Marco's grown up since 2010 or something like that.
Yeah. No, his tweets are definitely I've actually been retweeting some of his tweets. About a few months ago, he was on fire, and I think he is capable of doing the right thing much more than Burr. Again, the issue with Lindsey Graham, for example, is I think that they want to get rid of Lindsey Graham. I think they can out Lindsey Graham.
Yep.
But I think that they don't want to risk losing that Senate seat. There's a opponent of his on the Democrat side. He's a black guy. I forget his name. But he's pretty popular, and he was like within 6 points of Lindsey Graham. So the idea here would be that it would be too risky to lose that seat to the Democratic challenger, who's kind of a strong challenger. And I think that they're going to keep Lindsey Graham in place. He'll win the re-election, and then there's going to be something that's going to come out about Lindsey Graham and Ukraine and Syria that's going to make it so he resigns. And once he resigns, the Republican governor of South Carolina will put in a Republican to hold that Senate seat. Who knows? It could be Nikki Haley, you know?
That would be interesting.
Oh, she's South Carolina, right.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I just think that that's the way they're going to play Lindsey, because right now Lindsey needs Trump and Trump needs Lindsey. But I wouldn't trust Lindsey as far as you could throw him, nor would I trust Trey Gowdy at this point. And when you look at what's going on in South Carolina, there's there's a different kind of politics going on there. But, you know, they embrace Trump now, kicking and screaming, you know, and you wonder
that's exactly right. Kicking and screaming. That's a good way to say it.
Yeah. But Trump brings the opportunities of a lifetime to the Republican Party. And, you know, when you think about Paul Ryan and Trey Gowdy not delivering on the subpoena requests that Matt Gaetz has been complaining about recently, that's an interesting thing too. You have to look back and say there was a time when we had control of the House and Senate and we got nothing done.
That's right.
And so Trump can't do it alone, especially when he's the victim under attack and they're trying to impeach him on every single thing that he does. It's just, you know, why not have more Freedom Caucus? You know, it's great that John Ratcliffe is going to a full vote now, and he's going to be in. Rick Grenell's been gangbusters. He still has his job at the, as the German, the ambassador to Germany, so he can go right back to that. But somebody recently said, wouldn't it be great if Lindsey Graham took his act and went to every department and agency in the government? He, we would see a lot of cleanup.
Well, you know, the thing is that Grenell was the one who declassified the text from Susan Rice's January 20th, 2017 email about the secret Oval Office meeting.
Yeah, that's right. That full declassification. And, you know, we'll see how this plays out, because those 57 transcripts, someone says 53, I saw 57, but 50, those 50-something transcripts of all the key players, not one of them said that there was any iota of Russian collusion. So that means that if CrowdStrike doesn't have definitive information about the hack, and that all the intelligence community says that there was no proof of collusion between Trump and Russia, you got to now take that Russian thing right off the board, and you got to look at this for what it is. And this was Obama not only spying on James Rosen, not only spying, you know, on Associated Press, not only using his IRS to target conservative groups in 2012, there's much more that Obama was doing in covering up things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and all those different. So it's just going to be that Obama's White House was as corrupt as the day is long. But you and I knew that. We were talking about that all the time back then.
8 years in a row.
Yeah,
and beyond, eight years in a row and beyond.
And we were wondering why it is that there was no justice for Obama. And that's why he got away with saying with O'Reilly during the Super Bowl interview, he says, not a smidgen of
corruption.
Smidgen,
yeah. I keep using the word smidgen as in somewhat of a sarcasm. Kimberly Strassel. Sources say acting DNI Richard Grenell has declassified the full text of the January 20th, 2017 Susan Rice email to self. Part of the email has been released, but parts remain redacted. It has been sent to the DOJ. Let's hope that Congress gets a hold of it and releases it soon. And she wrote that on the 19th. Does it have the whole letter here?
I have the whole letter, but okay. on my Twitter, but we pretty much discussed the details of it, basically the details of who was in the room. See, the biggest problem of that letter is that it conflicts with Sally Yates's remarks. And I want to read this: newly declassified portions of a bizarre Inauguration Day email. Susan Rice wrote to herself, confirmed that 2017 campaign to target Michael Flynn was coordinated by Obama and orchestrated within the Oval Office itself. Ted Cruz is lit up right now. He's trending right now. And he said, wow, ongoing spying from an outgoing POTUS on the incoming POTUS directed by Obama himself is unprecedented in the 243 years of the nation's history.
You know, the reason why I brought this up is that, you know, what was her thinking? Or maybe she wasn't thinking when she put this out to herself on the day that Donald Trump was to be inaugurated. And, you know, it became basically the property of the new president, not under the auspices of the old president. So she, you know, this is why I said earlier, is this the smoking 50 caliber machine gun?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a machine gunning of all these people. You know what I mean? It's not just one shot fired.
KT McFarland said that this was really more of a ruse to cover up a bigger crisis. And I think it involves, well, I mean, you know, let's face it, Uranium-1's never been properly litigated. Right.
Right.
And I think that the Uranium-1 fuel cells that were generated went through Burisma. And I think that's why Hunter found himself on a jet plane, Air Force 2, to China. And that's why he returned back with $1.5 billion guarantee on an investment. What was that investment for? I think it was for the byproduct and the riches of the Uranium One deal that was then being managed by Burisma as a way to make a lot of money. And I think that those two are connected. And then, of course, you know, the gun running, and, you know, we all know about
you bring in Mueller at that point too, the Uranium One.
Mueller was connected with that.
Yeah.
And so was
Hillary Clinton. Hello.
Yes, exactly.
Hello. I mean, all these actors are there. See, that's why I say you wouldn't, and, you know, I think we're right to assume and to look at this, that you got the other tier of players that are so big that Trump's not going to touch them right now, but he's definitely going to put the hands on them after the election. I really believe that. And my people in Washington have assured me that will happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't turn that down. I mean, the ramifications of this, and I know we don't have enough time to talk about all this stuff because we've talked about this ad nauseum, actually at the time when things were happening back as early as 2013. So we go way back here. You know, we have the goods on them just from our own memory bank. We have the institutional memory, which wasn't shared to the general public. Only our audiences understand this. But the depth by which these people have huge involvement, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, you're talking about Obama, you're talking about Biden, you're talking about Burisma, you're talking about all the things that are associated with Ukraine prior to and post, you know, the election now with Donald Trump and the cover-up and all this other stuff. These are big players around the world, and it goes to other international figures as well. All this stuff is related somehow to the big power players in China. I mean, in Korea. You know, we were identifying and we outed. Actually, it was our own Chris Street who did the research to find out that it was Biden, in effect, that was helping to bring missile components from Ukraine, which is where they used to build the Soviet-style missiles, I might add. All the motors, all the rockets, all the ICBMs were built in the Ukraine. But they were shipping those products, basically, over to, guess where, Korea. I mean, it's not an accident. I mean, it's certainly Korea cannot make on their own. They don't have the skills. They don't have the manufacturing to make, you know, a missile that's going to be an ICBM-quality missile and go up into the atmosphere very, very high and deliver multiple weapons. I mean, that was a Soviet-style rocket, and it was delivered by the Bidens. It's not rocket science to start figuring these things out.
And all the time, you didn't even bring up Jeffrey Epstein. You didn't bring up Seth Rich. These are all unanswered questions that we deserve the right. We have the right to answer.
Well, the Epstein thing is really playing out in California, and a lot of people are wondering why. Hey, we haven't heard too much complaining or bickering and barking at the president out of Hollywood in the last few months. Well, you know, maybe they're starting to break up the pedophile rings in Hollywood. Shocking. And maybe Gil Garcetti is not a happy camper because Donald Trump is cleaning that mess out. And maybe Gil Garcetti, the mayor of Los Angeles, has his hands on that. But let's go ask Gavin Newsom, or let's ask Adam Schiff or Ed Buck. Let's ask a whole host of people about the child molestation and pedophile rings that that Trump has broken up, by the way. Shocking. Shocking stuff.
You said it.
Shocking stuff. Okay, Scott, tell us how we can hear your show and everything and all that good stuff.
Yeah, it's just redstatetalkradio.com and scottadamshow.com. Check me out. That's it.
Hey, listen, but what about Leonora? You never mention her.
Hey, again.
Come on, brother.
The phone apps. Remember that to remind people about the phone apps, we might be having some trouble with those in the coming days, weeks, and that we have a solution for that.
Awesome.
What were you going to say about Leonora?
I was going to say, well, you know, you're missing the better half of you is Leonora.
That's true. Yes, she's great. And she was really wonderful with our interview we had today with Matthew Whitaker.
And that went really well, huh?
Yeah.
We'll catch it on a replay. Anyway, Scott, thanks for being with us here on Agenda 21 Radio.
Take care, Paul. Thank you.
Awesome. Scott Adams with you. Scott Adams Show and, of course, Red State Talk Radio. Anyway, thanks for listening, and ladies and gentlemen, stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.